Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
Lethal simplicity. I like to score fast. It's hard not to be a nose fan. Get Florida State back. I want a damn good defense. We're still undefeated. Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. After a long hiatus, yes, it's been a while. This is the time of year when I am visiting coaching clinics and doing plenty of study, meeting with different staffs and so on. So, and also it's spring practice. You're getting plenty of coverage from elsewhere, and there's some stuff I'm not going to go into. So definitely not going to put out a whole lot of these. Probably put one out next week as well. But we'll definitely have a lot to talk about after the spring game. But in the interim, let's go ahead and get caught up on some of the things that we've seen so far in spring practice. Like I said, ton to get caught up on. But before we go any further, I do want to welcome a new sponsor to the show. Now, those of you who've listened to this show for a while know that there's been a bit of a theme with the sponsorship of this show. Starting with Luis Marquez from Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville. You know that if you're going to go do any sort of real estate transaction in Jacksonville, you want to go through Luis. You also know that if you're going to do any sort of real estate transaction in the state of Florida that has anything to do with mortgage loans, then you're going to want to go through Resolution Home Loans. Chad and Shannon will take care of you better than anybody else in the state. Make sure you hook up fellow Knowles on that. So buying a house, making sure you have the right mortgage situation, that's been the theme. Well, now I'm going to add a third level to this. Proud and excited to welcome Garage Makeovers as a sponsor to the show. Now, Garage Makeovers is a garage remodeling company in South Florida. They are the top-rated garage remodeling company on Home Advisor and Angie's List. They're licensed and insured and have been serving all of Palm Beach and Broward County since 2005. Long track record of success. And what they do, they will make sure that your garage is as organized and it's going to be pristine. I've seen some of their jobs. It's pretty amazing. Their services, they do painting, drywall work, overhead storage, polyaspartic flooring, which I highly recommend, cabinets, shelving, slot wall, accessories for anything you have. If you have a garage and you live in Palm Beach or Broward County, you're going to want to go through Garage Makeovers, get your storage situation set up so that when you open that garage, it's not an embarrassment to you and your whole family because of the mess in there. Call Nathan at Garage Makeovers for all your storage and organizational needs, and you'll be hooked up. Nathan actually got got both degrees at Florida State, diehard Seminole fan, actually worked in Seminole Athletics for a little while. So this is somebody you want to work with. Go through Garage Makeovers for all your storing and organizational needs. Give Nathan a call at 954-571-8774. That's 954-571-8774. Information also in the show notes. Let him know you heard about him from the Unconquered Podcast. Definitely help me out as well. So if you have any needs, like I said, or if you know anyone who's even considering anything in the garage, get that done. So one more level of sponsorship for this show having to do with making the place you live as good as possible. Well, anyhow, let's go ahead and get to some discussion here. First thing that I just have to observe is just how much the reports of practice, and I'm not talking about media reports and all that. I'm talking about people who have been in full practices. So, you know, I've gotten some messages and chatted with people who've been in these full practices, and I'm telling you that it's interesting to hear what they're saying. They're talking about how unusually good, and these are guys who visit practices at Florida and at Miami and other places, and they're talking about they're like, man, the energy in these practices is really off the chain. I mean, these kids are really amped up, and you can see the excitement level in the program. That continues to be, if nothing else, that continues to be the theme of spring practice so far. And you see this with players tweeting about it. You see Corey Durden the other day tweeted about how football hasn't been this fun since Pee Wee League. Well, that says a lot, because college football, I'm telling you, from someone who's been through spring practices like this, spring practice is generally not fun. And college football in general is a job. So if you can find a way to motivate guys and really believe that it's fun and really have fun in the process, that's saying something. Now listen, it's no longer, you know, how much fun you're having ultimately does come back to whether or not you're winning or not. But there's a little bit of a chicken and egg thing here. When you're able to keep guys having fun and motivated and doing what you're asking them to do while completely bought in, then that leads to winning. So yes, this is, you know, we can't just say, oh, you know, they're going to clearly win the 2018 national title because things are fun again. You know, Alabama's done pretty well without players talking about how fun it is to play for Nick Saban. But you know, this is something of a culture. This is a major cultural change in that regard, and it's something that I think will probably reap some benefits from these players who want to be out on that field and playing for these coaches. So good for Taggart, good for this staff for really getting these guys to buy in. And the other thing is that the accountability is still there. It's not that these kids aren't getting chewed out. It's not that they're not being held accountable. It's not that they're not demanding excellence and that they're able to go around and just dance through practice. That's the real key, is that they're managing to combine this fun atmosphere with a strong emphasis on accountability. And you know, that actually goes back to Taggart's comments on the first spring practice or spring scrimmage, that is, talking about how, well, you know, we've still got a long way to go. You know, we got to get lined up better. You know, we got to stop with the pre-snap penalties and all that. And what does he focus on the discipline stuff? So it's not that that's being ignored, but it is interesting to see the way that they're doing this. And I've always been, I mean, I was raised by a dad and coached by a dad who was a work hard, play hard guy. And I've always been a work hard, play hard guy. When I coach, I'm chest bumping my players in practice after they make a play. Now I'm chewing their tail when they're not doing what's right. When they're not doing their assignment, they're getting their butt chewed. But when they do something right, I want to make sure that everybody's celebrating. And this is something that this staff has emphasized, is, you know, when your teammate makes a great play, don't just give them a, yeah, good job. Celebrate, you know, enjoy the process. So this is an interesting thing. It's not just trust the process with this staff. What they're trying to do is they're saying, enjoy the process, focus on the process and enjoy it. Which, you know, that's a good way to make sure that things don't get too outcome oriented, is when you can get to the place where the guys are doing it because they're actually enjoying the process and they believe in what they're doing, and that seems to be where they are. So that's all positive coming out of practice so far. That said, it is still spring, and spring practice always means guys being held out. It means usually the defense just dominating the offense because they're further along. Usually there's offensive starters out, and when starters are out on offense, it tends to make a bigger difference because you have to be, especially if you've got starters out on the offensive line, you have to have some continuity there on offense because you have to do things right. Defense, you're just reacting. Defense, you're just you're running to the ball to some degree. Offense, you've got to have things clicking, and usually in the spring, defense stays ahead pretty much the whole way. Well, that's from the reports I've gotten. That's been the general consensus. I was getting texts from a practice not that long ago where basically I was told, "Wow, the defense is just dominating. The offense looks so thin, and they're struggling. The defense is just dominating." And I texted back, well, that's spring, and then, you know, there's a good laugh about that because that's the way things work. But, you know, the offense has had Eberle, Minshew, Bavion Johnson, Juwan Williams. That's four of your best offensive linemen, and arguably two of your three or four most talented offensive linemen, and Bavion Johnson and Juwan Williams, that are out, that have missed significant time or have missed the entire spring. And when you're missing those four guys and some other guys have missed, you know, banged up front, it limits what your whole offense can do because you can't protect. And you can't, you know, you can usually run it a little bit better in that regard. And that's where you tend to spend spring on a little bit more of that sort of thing when it comes to playing up front. You're going to run the ball a little bit more. You're going to focus on physicality, doing that stuff, because you once you get into 11 on 11, it's hard to throw in the spring, particularly once you get to the two offensive line, because so many guys tend to be out. Once you get to the two offensive line, you're going to just get a lot of sacks. So that's what you're getting. And, you know, that's pretty typical. Now, it would be concerning, actually, especially given the last few years, if the defense was getting dominated. So, you know, this is par for the course. It's what you expect. And, you know, the offense also not only has those offensive linemen out, but they were already thin at wide receiver. And then, as everybody knows, Nyquan Murray then goes out with a torn meniscus in his knee, need a little cleanup surgery on that. So he's out. And then they had to move Ontario Wilson from corner to wide receiver, where he's seemed to do pretty well. It'll be interesting to see how long he stays there. I thought when he got signed, he might wind up moving there long term anyway, because the numbers were thin and he's a really fluid athlete with the ball in his hands. But you know, we'll see what happens as the other guys, as you know, five guys arrive on campus in the fall. Again, he's a good enough athlete, though. He could probably keep hold his own and keep some of those guys off the field initially, at least. So we'll see what happens there. But you know, with as thin as they are at wide receiver, that also makes things that much more difficult on the quarterbacks and so on, because you can't just run the wheels off the receivers. That's when you get more injuries. And this is something that the coaching staff has been clear on, that I was told early on, is we're not going to take the Nick Saban perspective. We're not going to treat our guys like Alabama does, where we're just going to grind guys up in practice every day and, you know, basically assume that we're going to recruit well enough to replace him. We're going to try to keep our guys healthy. We're going to try to maintain we're going to be physical, but we're not going to beat them up in practice every day because, you know, we want the best out of each one of our kids. And so that's something that they've really emphasized. We're going to be physical, but we're not going to grind up our guys. And so so given that, they're being conscious of the load that they're putting on these guys, and that again limits what you can do offensively. That said, Tomorian Terry, every report coming out of practice is that he has been dominant at times. Now, if he's in, you know, all of the wide receivers in the new system, they're learning. They've got to learn their route adjustments. They've got to learn how to run specific things the right way in this particular offense, to be in the right yardage, to be in the right spots, to make sure that they're reading coverages properly. I mean, there's a lot to playing wide receiver at this level, and they're having to make that adjustment. But Terry has, and we talked about this on this show last year, that when he was signed, he was probably the most talented wide receiver on the Florida State roster, given his size, speed, fluidity combination. And he has looked every bit of that this spring at times, where, you know, you can see the talent that's there. And this offense, with the way that they throw downfield so much, has a real chance, a real opportunity to take advantage of his size and what he does bring to the table pretty well. So because again, they like to throw downfield, they like to challenge vertically more than many other offenses will do. So he fits really well. He's got to continue to develop, but you know, you're looking at a guy that's definitely a first round potential player. And again, to be the most talented receiver on the roster when you've got Keith Gavin across from you is saying a lot. Another kind of surprise has been how much positive stuff has been leaking out of camp about DeKalon Brooks, who when he was signed, I basically had him tiered in the future depth category. Probably not going to start in his career, but a good special teams player, a good glue guy in the locker room, a guy that could step in and get some key reps here and there down the line, but probably not physically on the level of some other guys that are on this roster, and maybe not a guy that you expect to really step in and be a starter at any point. Well, he's been getting reps at the ones at linebacker. Now, some of that is because Josh Brown and Emmett Rice have been out, but a lot of it's just been because he's been pretty good, and he's actually put on some weight. He's over 200 pounds. And he's fluid. So looks like Florida State, that Fisher and that staff may have found another guy, a guy, you know, you look at Fred Jones, a legacy that they took when a lot of people didn't feel like that, like he would be anything more than a backup or, you know, basically a depth player, was a wasted scholarship. And Fred Jones, yeah, he's not been a starter, but he's been a really important rotation player over the years. And DeKalon Brooks is now looking like he may end up being one of those legacies that isn't just in the locker room to be in the locker room. He's out there playing pretty well. And so, that's very positive news, especially given some of the lack of depth at linebacker there, and what he can offer in this defense, where they want some hybrid type linebackers that can move around on the outside. If you can run on the outside and be fluid and cover a little bit on the outside with a linebacker, that's something that Harlan Barnett is gonna definitely want to make use of. So that's a real positive for the spring so far. Another change, and again, other outlets have discussed this some, is Wally Aimé at defensive end, moving from the defensive tackle spot, where they've got, even despite the recently confirmed Marvin Wilson MCL injury, which has him out for the rest of the spring, even with that, the defensive tackle position is so loaded and so deep that it makes sense to move one of your second guys, a guy that's going to be a three technique in your second group rather than a starter. He's going to be behind DeMarcus Christmas. Go ahead and have him lose a little bit of weight and move out to defensive end, because he's a good enough athlete to do it, to be that big end, particularly against the run, to be a two down defensive end in what they're doing. What this also suggests is that they're going to be running a good bit of hybrid front stuff, which is something we've talked about on this show in the past to expect from Harlan Barnett, to see them sort of melding the concepts of 4-3 and 3-4 stuff up front, and to use that big end variously, and then to go to three-man lines on third down or in passing downs. But basically to have half the defensive line playing a sort of 3-4 technique on the front side, and then have that backside really trying to penetrate and create and cause disruption, and letting that backside end really let him turn that guy loose. And that, of course, that backside end is more often than not going to be Brian Burns, and you definitely want to turn that guy loose as often as possible. So this fits a lot of what Florida State has in terms of personnel, and again, it just shows that they're doing a good job so far of identifying which players need to be where and moving guys to where they can offer something. They're not just going to sit as depth, and you're not going to have one of your best 11 possible players sitting on the sideline. No, you're going to move that 11th guy from being behind, say, your number one or two guy, to being next to him at another position where maybe the guy that they're replacing is just a hair behind him. But there's been some good reports also about Janarius Robinson, who I really think this could be a year that he takes a big step forward at that defensive end position. So, and we'll see how much he rotates between strong side or weak side. I think he's really going to stay on the strong side more often, but word has been very good about him. Another thing, my money continues to remain on James Blackmon being the most likely starter at quarterback. I know there are a lot of people out there who think that DeAndre Francois is just a natural starter, you know, that he played better in 2016 than Blackmon did in 2017. And, you know, obviously when he comes back, the job will be his because he's just a better player. It's a big difference once you have a spring under your belt, once you have a year to under your belt of starting experience and a full bowl practice and then spring, and then you get a chance to really study what you're doing. It's a totally different thing. And Blackman's now there, and he's now starting to click, and he's getting all these full speed reps in the spring that are giving him an opportunity to flash what he brings to the table. And he really does fit what Willie Taggart wants to do. And I've been told that they're going to be throwing the ball more than they'd thrown the ball in the past under Taggart. He thinks that with this personnel, they can do that. And ultimately they want to build to be a team that's really balanced and that does throw it a little bit more, and certainly better, definitely better than what they what Taggart teams have in the past. And they think they can do that. And Blackmon is one of those guys that can do that. And if you think about what they're wanting to do, a little bit more on that in a moment, with throwing the ball downfield, those deep posts, you know, go routes, a lot of vertical stuff. That's the stuff that Blackmon really throws the best. And so that gives him an opportunity to really, really shine there. Now, Francois may come back in the fall and win the job. But like I said, my at this point, my money would still stay on Blackmon being the leader in the clubhouse here. Now, as far as other things, it's also been a terrific recruiting spring. I'm not going to get into too much detail there, but the main thing of importance is that they've gotten all three quarterbacks on their the top three quarterbacks on their board to visit, which is huge to get all those guys on campus to watch you, because they've not seen your offense at Florida State. You get a chance to get those guys to watch you in practice, to watch you coaching your quarterbacks, and to meet with you and to sit in on meetings and do all of that stuff. That's huge. And they've gotten all three of their guys to visit this spring, to visit on their own dime, mind you. And that includes Jaden Daniels, who, for my money, is the top guy on the board, quarterback from California. Tyson Fomakan, who is, in my view, the number two guy on the board, although I haven't chatted with the staff at all to have any idea of where he sits on their board relative to the others. But he's the guy that reminds me a tremendous amount. I mean, it's uncanny how much he looks like EJ Manuel at this stage. A little ahead maybe of Manuel as a passer, a little behind him as an athlete coming out, but very similar prospect. And that's a good thing, by the way. And then Sam Howell from just up the road in North Carolina also visited, and a lot of onlookers think that Florida State leads for his services. Another very good prospect. Now, it is a down year for quarterbacks. I think aside from Jaden Daniels, these guys, they project as good starters down the line, but really not anything more than, say, a James Foster, or not significantly better prospects than, say, James Foster was last year. There is not a Justin Fields in this class. Jaden Daniels, like I said, I think is the best guy they've got on the board. But again, you're dealing with a California recruit, and the question is, do you want to put all your eggs in a California basket when you've got to fend off those West Coast schools to get him to come? So they'll know better. I mean, I will say this staff does a pretty good job of assessing their realistic opportunities there, and I think they'll take two quarterbacks in this class if they can. So, but again, really, really good recruiting. They've gotten top players from the 2019, 2020, and 21 classes to visit, and it's just been an all-star team that's been running through and getting a chance to see spring practice. So they've used this time really well in a recruiting sense. Okay, before we go any further, I once again want to thank my sponsors. Thank the sponsors of this show. Louis Marquez from Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville. Like I've said before, he's going to be the best photographer and videographer out there for your home. If you want to list anything in the greater Jacksonville area, Louis is the one that you want to go with, because he's going to make sure that your house gets sold. 90% of home buyers search online first. You want to have the best possible marketing campaign online, which includes smooth, professional walkthrough video. Louis is the guy to get the guy to go with that. And if you're thinking about buying real estate in the greater Jacksonville area, give Louis a call. Let him know you heard about him from the Unconquered podcast, and definitely helps the show out. Also, Resolution Home Loans. We're also brought to you by Resolution Home Loans. Chad and Shannon, diehard Knowles, who brings seminal speed to the to the buying process. You don't have to worry about a deal falling through. Their Almost Home program will ensure, they guarantee, that you will close within 15 days or the contract closing date, or they'll give you $500 off your closing cost. Give them a call at 844-FSU-LOAN and let them know you heard about them from the Unconquered podcast, or you can visit fsuhomeloans.com. Again, when you're filling it out, let them know that you heard about them from the Unconquered podcast. Definitely helps us out. And let me know if you happen to do anything with them, and I'll go ahead and throw in a free item of your choice from the Growing Unconquered podcast shop. Should have a new shirt up there within the week. And then, of course, Garage Makeovers, top-rated garage remodeling company in South Florida. Give Nathan a call at Garage Makeovers for all your storage and organizational needs. Once again, all that information in the show notes. All right, a couple other things. And this one is related to some stuff that I've picked up over the last week or so. So I talked to some people who would be very much in the know about what Florida State wants to do offensively. And I've got a good amount of prior Taggart offense, all 22 tape. So I can evaluate a lot of that stuff well. But I did pick up some things over the last week that have suggested that there's going to be some wrinkles that I didn't quite expect as much, given what I'd gotten early on. So worth mentioning at this point. For one, I think we're going to see, based on what I've put together, what I've learned in the last week and a half, we're going to see more Baylor influence in the Florida State offense, more Art Briles type. Kendall Briles type influence in the Florida State offense than I had initially expected. What that means is those super wide splits, some emphasis on getting vertical out of those wide splits, you know, going wide with three guys. You know, if you go trips, you have the furthest guy out outside, you know, splitting the difference between the numbers and the sideline rather than being on the numbers. And then the number two guy lined up where the number one guy normally would. And then the number three guy lined up still out there outside the hash. That type of thing is something that I think we're going to see from Florida State a little bit more than I certainly expected. And of course, Baylor paired that with a very heavy emphasis on a gap running game. So running inside zone, but they coached it a little differently, coaching the inside zone to go from, instead of from B gap to from front side B gap to front side A gap, they actually coach the Briles system coaches their inside zone to go from front side A gap to backside A gap. It's basically all A gap stuff unless something really obvious opens up. So it's about more vertical displacement, a little bit more aggressive on the offensive line. I'm kind of expecting to see a little bit more of that than maybe I'd expected initially. So pairing some of that also with, of course, power, which then, you know, that's designed the way that they do it to go A gap, B gap stuff as well. Pairing that with that vertical stretch that they're going to put on with some speed from stretching so wide horizontally. And then, you know, obviously all the screen stuff that we expected. I mean, Taggart's been doing that for a while, but a little bit more space. And I think they'll go higher tempo, than what I initially projected. So I'm calling an audible here. I think they'll go, ultimately they'll end up trying to go faster as a default than what, Taggart's track record in the past has suggested. And that they'll end up imitating a little bit more. I mean, it's still Taggart's offense. Listen, it's still Taggart's offense. It's still, basically a spread out version of the Jim Harbaugh system. Still the Harbaugh, still basically off the Harbaugh tree, but there's going to be a lot more, integration of Briles' principles than I certainly expected before. And a lot of that's coming, a lot of that's going to come from the Walt Bell side, bringing some of the stuff that they ran at Maryland. And a lot of that stuff came from basically powwows with Kendall Briles and of course, Anderson, who he had coached under at Arkansas State and so on. So I think we're going to see more of that. So, and that also means a little bit more aggressive, passing game, even than what Taggart had has had traditionally in the Gulf Coast stuff. So continuing to move forward, continuing to adjust into into modern approaches. I think we're seeing just the next step in development of the Gulf Coast offense, and I'm really fascinated to see what happens with that, because again, you know, aside from say the final RG3 Baylor offense, so that would have been, I think, 08, either 08 or 09, and then the 2012 Baylor offense, this Florida State team, even though there's some thinness at that wide receiver position, this Florida State offense would be the most talented offense to run anything like that offensive scheme. So worth noting. I mean, we haven't really seen, aside from those couple Baylor teams, which set records, this would be the most talented set of players to try to run something like that or close to that over the last few years and really ever. And nobody has paired that with the kind of defensive talent that Florida State has. Now, several other teams are, you know, headed that direction. You know, this is filtering more and more into being just the mainstream of modern college football. But it is worth noting that Florida State will be, it's going to be an interesting experiment to see how this goes with the kind of talent that Florida State has. So, and you know, from what we've seen in practice, they've not eliminated that middle, some of the pro route tree passing game that the players already knew. They've not entirely eliminated that. They've retained enough to still be dangerous when teams load up. But the way that this works is if you pump that much air into the offense, it forces defenses to commit. And if they're going to start really just pushing to try to stop Akers or Patrick on the inside, well, then you're going to take your shots, and you're either going to score really quickly, or it's going to be a quick three and out. But you're forcing teams to declare whether or not they're going to cover your speed downfield or whether they're going to stop the run. So this is going to be an interesting thing. It'll be interesting to see how much of the Baylor influence we see, but I'm now expecting, based on what I learned in the last week, more than I'd initially anticipated when, you know, given what I'd been told when the hires first were made and shortly thereafter. So worth noting. Also interesting that I was doing some clinic stuff with a college staff over the last couple weeks, and they were talking about how they had gone back and really tried to strip out a lot of the redundancies in their offense and anything that would make their offense difficult more difficult on wide receivers, because essentially they said, listen, we're in a situation where our youngest wide receivers are our most talented. And as we've been evaluating, we've just got to find ways to be able to get these kids on the field and get them to contribute earlier, because it's just so hard to get wide receivers to contribute early in college. It was interesting to hear that discussion and to have that discussion with them, because, you know, again, when you can't get away from route adjustments in college, wide receivers have to be able to read coverage. They have to be able to beat the press while understanding where the help is coming from and what kind of adjustment needs to be made against what kind of coverage and all of these things. You can't get away from that. And in high school, there isn't any of that. So you have to find ways to simplify some of those things, or to reduce how many plays or adjustments those receivers are responsible for in order to get younger receivers on the field. And this is a discussion that's been had around Florida State football for a while, you know, because Florida State, you know, a lot of the younger talent at wide receiver, the reputation is, well, you know, they've not been able to play the younger talent. And that's not been entirely justified. They've gotten better production than the norm out of their underclassmen at wide receiver. But it is worth noting that this is something that Florida State is doing as well. You know, that said, this other staff was also talking about how difficult it is to do that and to expect contribution from those wide receivers if they're not EEs, if they're not early enrollees. Because, you know, if you have an early enrollee, that kid basically is close to a sophomore by the time you get out of fall camp, and that kid's ready to play. If the kid's not an early enrollee, it just takes so much time, and the kid has to stay healthy during camp, and everything has to bounce the right way and fall the right way, and he's got to be a super smart kid, even with the simplifications, to be able to get contribution out of him. But if you only require your guy to learn one position, so, you know, okay, you're going to play X and that's it. You only need to know the responsibilities for X on these plays. You don't need to know the rest. That can help simplify. And that's actually the thing, more than anything else, that made things difficult on receivers in Fisher's system. People talked about, you'd hear ignorant people talking about the route tree or whatever else. That wasn't really the issue. But if you have to learn the slot, both outside receiver positions and so on, then it takes a little bit longer because you're having to learn all the spots. And that's been the norm generally I mean, Spurrier's system, you have to learn all the spots. You know, the same thing in Petrino's system. You have to learn all the spots. But if you're going to use younger guys in spots, you know, that maybe this guy's not going to start, but you want to make sure that he has a role and you're going to incorporate him as much as possible, then, you know, you give him one position. You just need to know the outside roles for the first half of the year or whatever, and you master those, then, you know, that can help. And then eventually, you know, you work to where everybody knows all of them at once. And I think that's what we'll see a little bit more of from some of the young guys, because definitely in Florida State's case, aside from Terry, and Gavin also is super talented, but once Jordan Young and Harrison get on campus, those are the two most talented receivers on the roster, say, aside from Terry, who is a freak. But, you know, they're at least as talented, if not more so, more talented than Gavin. And again, that's saying a lot. But, you know, those guys have some speed, have a different gear than the rest in the Florida State offense. So that's going to make it interesting, though. And I'm curious to see how quickly they're, you know, especially going to some of the Baylor stuff, how quickly that could get some of the young guys involved for certain roles. Again, it's difficult. Usually, if a guy's not an early enrollee, even if he's smart, you're kind of hoping that it's after the bye week that you start to really get the most contribution from a young freshman. It takes about that long. And you need that bye week to really be able to hammer home some of the stuff that you're prepping for each week. Because each week is basically just a race to get stuff in and to get stuff installed and to prepare and make sure the guys who are going to play know what they need to do. But again, if you're only installing, say, 24 plays for the entire week, and you're only and you know, there's route adjustments and such built into each thing that you're running, but if you're only installing, you know, 24, 28 plays in a given week, and, you know, you're just gonna rep those a bunch, then that does give you a little bit more opportunity to try to work with some of those young guys and work them in during the process of practice. Now, before we wrap up, I do have one question still scraping around the bottom of the mailbag. This is from Brian Leninger. With the new staff, which position group do you think will be the biggest improvement on offense and defense? With Taggart's offense, do you think we'll be running some 11 personnel on third and long, or will we be going four wide more? So that's actually a few questions, and there's a lot going on here. So one thing at a time here. The biggest improvement on offense and defense. I think the position group that's going to improve the most defensively is the cornerback position. Harlan Barnett is one of the best corners coaches in the country, and he has been working with some very talented corners in practice. And, you know, there'd been some slippage technically. The technique of some of those guys, and I'd critiqued it on this show going back to 2014, the technique that we'd seen from the corners at Florida State has not been all that good. It's been sloppy. That's not going to cut it with Harlan Barnett. I think you're going to see significantly improved secondary play overall, but the corner position is really where you're going to see the biggest improvement. You're going to see much more attention to detail in terms of the technical side at the cornerback position. And with as much as they're going to be playing straight press man, that's going to really go well with Florida State's personnel there and allow those guys to shine. So on the defensive side, I think we're going to see the corners really come to the forefront. And this is going to be, I think, a real breakout year for Stanford Samuels in particular. But, you know, and I'm curious to see what happens when Carlos Becker gets back, when some of the guys that are not playing in the spring are out there, whether the freshman or Becker. There's some talent that's going to be at that corner position, and we're going to see some of those guys working in as well. But Taylor and Stanford Samuels, I think with Harlan Barnett, depending on those guys to do what he asks his corners to do, that's where we're going to see a real improvement on what we've seen in the past. They'll be able to play banjo technique. How about that? That's a major thing. The other thing is that I also think that the linebacker position is going to improve a lot too. So, I mean, that would be my second answer. And in some ways you could make a case that there's more room for improvement there because there's so much talent at the cornerback position that despite the sloppy technique, they were still able to do stuff. but the linebacker position had been so shoddy in terms of technique and in terms of what they were doing the last few years that there's a lot of room for improvement there. And I think, again, what they're getting out of that position, what we're going to see out of that position, is going to be on the order of what we're going to see at the corner position. So if it's not corner, it's linebacker, but they're both going to be massively improved. On the offensive side, I think the position group that we're going to see the biggest and most obvious improvement from is the quarterback position. And that's, honestly, that's not even because of Taggart and the new system or the new staff. It's just a matter of numbers and experience. Instead of having either a redshirt freshman with no real backup in 2016 or a non-early enrollee, raw as he could come in, prospect, true freshman in 2017, instead of having one of those guys at quarterback, you're going to have a seasoned returning starter, whether it's Francois or whether it's Blackman, or if it ended up being Hockman, it's a guy that beat out one of those guys. But you have multiple guys that can play at that position and play reliably, and that makes a huge difference. So even if the old staff had returned, I would expect the quarterback position to take a quantum leap forward in 2018. So I expect to see that position take a leap forward regardless. Now, in terms of the benefit that they're going to get from what Taggart's doing, if you're looking at pumping a lot of space in that offense and opening some opportunities for those receivers downfield, that only magnifies that improvement, because you're going to get some more big plays while limiting the opportunities for mistakes, because you're throwing more quote-unquote 50-50 balls. Although, again, I'm of the view that with a 6'4 wide receiver like Tamorian Terry, or the kind of athletes that you're putting out there for Florida State, those aren't 50-50 balls. Those are 80-20 balls. And if you're putting 80-20 balls downfield like that, you're not going to throw a whole lot of interceptions, but you are going to create some big plays, particularly since you've got the ability to run the football and teams are going to have to still keep enough in the box to be able to stop you, so, or to be able to limit you there. So I think the most obvious improvement is going to be at the quarterback position. That's also going to help the wide receiver position. Those things are to some degree, obviously, that's recursive, but I think the quarterback position is going to be what everybody talks about how much better the quarterback position is playing in 2018. That's going to be one of the talks of the year, is what I would expect. And the staff will get a lot of credit for it. And, you know, they'll deserve a lot of credit for it. But keep in mind that a lot of it's just simply a matter of personnel and that changing to having some experience and having guys that actually can play college football and have proven that they can play college football at that stage. So, that's what I expect. Now, next, the final stuff is, with Taggart's offense, do you think we'll be running some 11 personnel on third and long, or will we be going four wide more? Okay, a couple things here. One is, I actually expect less third and long in Taggart's system than what you tended to get in Jimbo's system. And there are a couple reasons for that. One is, Taggart tends to run more between the tackles and really between the guards. So B gap and A gap runs. So a lot less off tackle, a lot less C gap stuff, a lot less wide zone, a lot less trying to get outside with the running backs, and a lot more A gap, B gap stuff, trying to gash you on the interior with the running game. What that means is that there's less opportunity for defenses to get tackles for loss. It also tends to mean that you get a little bit less in the way of seams for big plays in the running game. I mean, that was the trade that Fisher was willing to make in that, is that he was willing to, with some of the counter draws and the counter tray stuff that they ran, a lot of that stuff was designed to get on the edge. And it's because he had fast backs that he wanted to get on the edge, but it takes a little bit of time to get there. And so if you get penetration as a defense, you're going to get some tackles for a loss. It's Florida State gave up tackles for a loss in exchange for big plays. Taggart's not as willing to do that. You're going to see more positive plays in the running game. And then his offense is basically counting on, well, we've got some studs at offense or at the running back position. And so if you give him a little daylight and you just make sure you don't take losses, then you're going to get more opportunities to keep giving it to him. And eventually they're going to bust one anyway. So that tends to be a little bit more of the philosophy there. And then, you know, when teams try to pinch down on those, then you start getting backs bouncing it because of the natural action. But you're going to get more interior. So what that's going to mean, though, is that I expect we'll see less in the way of third and long overall for Taggart's offense, because you're going to see a lot more running on first down, a lot more between the tackle stuff where there's less opportunity for tackles for a loss. So that's number one. But number two is, to actually answer the question, I do expect that we'll see a lot of 11 personnel from Taggart, and that's not just on first down or second down, but even on third and long. And one of the main reasons for that is they've got some personnel at that tight end position that is really flexible. Trey McKitty's one of the best players on this team. In terms of ceiling, in terms of what he can bring to the table, in terms of what Taggart likes to have on his offense, Trey McKitty is a dream piece for Taggart. Taggart recruited him so hard at Oregon because he really wanted that kind of player in his offense. So, and the thing is, what you'll see is you'll see the tight end. You'll see 11 personnel out there, but the tight end will be lined up way outside the numbers, way out there, forcing you to match up with, you know, bring either one of your linebackers all the way out to the sideline, which effectively blocks that guy, or you're going to have to cover that wide tight end with a defensive back who's at a disadvantage against that kind of size. So you're going to see some of that. You'll also see some 21 personnel. You'll see some of that where you're going to see the bigger personnel sets on the field to try to force the matchups that he wants. And again, some of that has to do with the lack of depth at wide receiver. Right now they don't have four healthy scholarship wide receivers to toss out there that they can really trust for four wide sets. What I think we'll see a lot of is a lot of 11, even a lot of 12, where you're going to see two backs, but one of the backs is going to be lined up in the slot. Now that's going to be more of a first, second down thing, but third and long, I think you'll see three wide and a tight end a lot. You'll see some four wide, but I actually think the amount of three wide versus four wide is going to be pretty similar to what you saw under Fisher. Fisher ran a lot of four wide stuff, a lot more than people realize. I mean, they based out of three wide, basically 11 was their base, but they ran a lot of four wide, maybe more than they should have given their personnel. What you'll see more from Taggart is that second running back on the field. You won't see a fullback. You'll see a second running back, and then you'll see the tight ends moving around a little bit more. Those will be your big differences. And both of those happen to play in very well to what Florida State has in terms of personnel on the roster. They've got running backs that can play that slot role and can be a real jet sweep threat and can move around and all that. And it makes a lot of sense to have those backs. You know, if you're going to put two backs on the field, don't make it a fullback when you got the running back stable Florida State does. So that's going to be your difference. But like I said, I think you're going to see on third and long, you're going to see a lot of 11 personnel. Now, if some of the young guys in particular, if some of those young guys develop at wide receiver, you'll definitely see some four wide. But I just don't think we're going to see him wanting to take Trey McKitty off the field a bunch. And you know, Nasir Upshur and some of these guys, some of these other guys, they're going to earn some time. So he's going to want to be able to have those guys out there, to be able to use them in the screen game out wide, to be able to put them in line and cause some mismatches in the passing game, to use them as an edge blocker, you know, flexed out, to do a lot of different stuff with them. And I think it'll be interesting to see how creatively they're able to use those guys. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to learning what they're doing. Obviously, on a lot of these things, as I learn more, there's going to be a certain amount where I'll be willing to speculate on some stuff, but there's some stuff that once I actually do get more direct intel on what they're planning to do, we're not going to want to talk about some of that stuff in the off season, because these other teams do monitor social media, they monitor podcasts and all this, and the last thing we want is to disadvantage Florida State's chances of springing anything new or anything different on those first couple teams on the schedule. So that's going to be some fun during the off season as we speculate on some of the things that are going to happen. We'll evaluate what we're able to see in the spring game, but then there's going to be some stuff that's definitely going to be left in house because Nobody wants that. Nobody, at least on the Seminole side. And, you know, as much as I cover this stuff, I am a former player. I don't want this stuff to get anything that that they're not willing to show. I don't want that stuff getting out. So any more than anybody associated with the program does. So that's going to be a nice balance to strike over the course of the offseason. So we'll go ahead and wrap the show there. Once again, I want to thank my sponsors, Luis Marquez from Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Chad and Shannon from Resolution Home Loans, and Nathan Forrest at Garage Makeovers. If you have any of those needs, definitely support the podcast. Contact all that information's in the show notes. Contact them. Let them know that you heard about them from the Unconquered podcast. And don't forget, if you've been enjoying this podcast and you are not a subscriber, go ahead and subscribe. You can subscribe through pretty much any podcast manager of your choice. And if you've been enjoying this podcast and you've not left a 5-star review on iTunes, iTunes helps the most, but any platform, whatever platform you're on, recommend the podcast. Give us 5-star reviews. It definitely helps out a ton. Be back soon with some more discussion of what we can discuss from Florida State spring practice under the Willie Taggart staff in the new Taggart era. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much, and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.